Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by Sports Drink, your digital water cooler. Sports Drink is a newly created internet community that tries to find the intersection of sports and not sports. They're here to help us grow and to hate your favorite team. A rising tide lifts all boats, so go check them out online or in social. Go to sportsdrink.org or open Instagram and type in Sports Drink, spelled like sports drink but without the vowels. So S-P-R-T-S-D-R-N-K. All we ask is that you close the door behind you. We're trying not to let out the funk. What's up, guys? Week 4 of the NFL season for 2022 officially in the books, with the 49ers beating the Rams and therefore the Rams letting me down. But I should have known better. Like, I known that San Francisco's kind of had LA's number. McVay's record against the 49ers is not good. And I went against that anyway and figured that the Rams would win, and they were decimated, actually. So I did not get my double digit win total this week, but I did finish 9-7. So I'm able to put a little more distance between myself and below 500 for the season thus far. So anyway, well, let's go ahead and start getting these games recapped, close the book on week 4 so we can get ready for week 5 and everything else in between. So this is the week 4 NFL review episode of the Bears Talk Underground. So let's get to it. So the week started off with a familiar omen that has been bad for me thus far. It's like my success has been determined by how the Thursday night game goes, and it did not get off to a good start because I thought the Dolphins would be able to beat the Bengals, with the Bengals kind of being unreliable. And, you know, like, they should have been 3-0 going into this game, and they were 1-2 because they dropped the first two games of the season. And instead, it was the Bengals who showed up to play in their pretty sick all-white unis. That was a pretty good look. I like that a lot, actually. And while they were in there and decked in all-white, they looked like the defending AFC champions. You know, the offensive line seems to be gelling because it protected Joe Burrow. He wasn't under fire, and this is a very good Miami Dolphin defense. He went 20 for 31, 287 and 2 touchdowns. But the story of the game, obviously, was Tua Tagovailoa. He was seen being, you know, kind of shaky in the game 4 days earlier against the Bills. Cleared concussion protocol, went back in the game and started on Thursday. Well, he kind of got ragdolled on a sack, and the first thing to hit the ground was his head. And he did that thing that, you know, you often see in UFC events when somebody gets knocked out cold, is their arms go stiff in a way. And, you know, Tua looked like that. He was carted off the field, taken to a local hospital in Cincinnati. He was released and was able to fly home with his team, and I think they've already ruled him out for this Sunday's game for the Dolphins. Teddy Bridgewater came in relief and played admirably, but you know, the Dolphins defense could not stop the Bengals as they, I think it was 20-15. So the Dolphins were within striking distance, and there was a turnover. Teddy Bridgewater hung one up and it got picked off, and the Bengals took that one back, or drove it back, I should say, for a touchdown. Hayden Hurst scored for the Bengals, and that put the game out of reach, 27-15. Gives me the brings the Bengals even at 2-2. The Dolphins lose their first game. They're 3-1. I take the loss as well, so I am 0-1 for week four. London, Sunday morning, 8 a.m. out here in the Central Time Zone. The Vikings and the Saints met up in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and the Vikings and Saints went back and forth quite a bit, especially in the fourth quarter. Four lead changes in the final 9.5 minutes, two in the last minute 51. Greg Joseph for the Vikings hitting a game winner from 47 with about 24 seconds to go. But what was really interesting was Will Lutz from the Saints hit a 60-yarder with that 151 to go in the game to tie it at 20. And then after Joseph for the Vikings made his field goal, the Saints actually got it into field goal range again, this time from 61, and he had enough leg, but he doinked it off the it was actually a double doink. And I was kind of annoyed because as a Bear fan, you see a double doink, obviously you have night terrors and flashbacks to that horrible moment. But what was really annoying me is that the announce team wouldn't say the words. They would say, off the upright and then off the crossbar. I was like, it's a double doink. Say it. Say double doink. Say it. They wouldn't say it. But they finally did when they got in the studio. They finally started calling it a double doink, but not in the moment, and I was bothered by that. But, with the miss, the Saints fall to the Vikings 28-25. The Vikings 3-1 going into this matchup with the Bears on Sunday, which I am personally not looking forward to. I think the Saints are 1-3. I think they've lost all three of their games since winning week one against the Falcons, and they had to come from behind to do that. Speaking of the Falcons, well, by the way, I got the pick right, so I'm 1-1. Falcons and Browns in Atlanta. I really thought Cleveland was going to be the better team here and come away with the win, even without Myles Garrett, who was out because of his car accident injuries. But it's like I was watching the highlights of the game, and the Browns pretty much lost it right off the bat. They had an opening drive. They get the ball all the way down inside the 5-yard line. They go for it on fourth down, and they come away with nothing. No field goal, no touchdown, no nothing. It's empty-handed. And then the Falcons go on a 10-0 run after that, including a Cordarrelle Patterson touchdown run. But the Browns were able to tie it at the half. But it just in the end, it wasn't enough. Youngway Koo, the kicker for the Falcons, was 3-for-3, including the game winner from 45 with 2:28 to go. And on their drive to either tie or take the lead, Kobe Brissett was picked off by the Falcons secondary. So they come up short 23-20. I take the loss on this one, so I am 1-2 now. So we head off to the NFC East, Cowboys and Commanders in Dallas. The Commanders wearing the all-black alternative uniforms. And watching the highlights, I went back and forth with whether or not I love or hate these uniforms, because all black is a pretty decent look, but the colors of the numbers didn't really work for me. It wasn't quite right. So it kind of falls in between love and hate, somewhere in the middle. If they didn't do it again, I wouldn't mind. But Carson Wentz, his offensive line took better care of him. This week, he was sacked 9 times last week against the Eagles, only sacked twice this week, but he threw 2 interceptions, so not helping his own cause very much. And Cooper Rush, who only wins football games, all he does is win games, 15 of 27, 223, and 2 touchdowns, and another W, 3-0 as starter. Dak Prescott 0-1 on the year, Cooper Rush 3-0 as the starter for the Cowboys as they down the Commanders 25-10. Got that one right, so I'm 2-2 on the week. And then probably the game of the week, the Seahawks and the Lions. That'll teach me to pick the Lions to win a game, because mistakes plague the Lions. Missed extra points. Goff, who ended up throwing for 378 and 4 touchdowns, threw a pick 6 in this one. And then the defense for the Lions. Gave up long touchdown runs to Rashad Penny on third and five. Or a third and five and third and 16, actually. When you're running the ball on third and 16, you're just trying to... You're running out that play. There's really no play in the playbook for third and 16. So you're doing what you can, getting as many yards as you can. If you get a first down, great. If not, then we'll punt and try again next time, kind of thing. Instead, kid ran it all the way in for a touchdown. And then third and five with about 3 minutes to go, he runs through the line. Not only does he get the first down, he hauls it all the way in for a touchdown, put the Seahawks up 10 with about 2:50 or so to go in the ballgame. At that point, it was 48-38. And, you know, Geno Smith went nuts in this one, 320 and two touchdowns. Rashad Penny, 151 yards rushing and two touchdowns. TJ Hockenson was probably the player of the game for the Lions, 179 yards receiving, eight catches and two touchdowns. The teams combined for nearly 1,100 yards and two punts, both of which came from Detroit. Seattle never punted in this game. I mean, it was a crazy back and forth. I mean, and the Lions, again, they were able to get it within a field goal. They scored a touchdown after that last Rashad Penny touchdown. They went for the onside. They almost got it back. But, you know, the fact that they fell so far behind in the first half is what really, really killed them. It's like I'm kind of sticking to the statement that I presented last week. If the Lions ever figure out how to play all 60 minutes, they're going to be a problem. You know, they're a tough out. You know, they're still holding true to that. But, you know, they have these lapses in these games where all of a sudden they go back to being the old Lions for a quarter and a half, and they fall behind 24-9 in the first half to the Seahawks and everything. If they can ever figure out how to prevent those things from happening, they're going to start winning football games. But if they keep having these lapses, when you score 45 points, you're not supposed to lose. And, you know, they lost 48-45. I thought the Lions had this one, tried to put a little faith in them because they play so tough. The Seahawks, having not played all that great leading up to it, coming off a loss to the Falcons and everything. But they showed up, no punts, 48 points. They take the dub back to Seattle with them. I take the loss, so I'm, what, 2-3 at this point? Here comes another one. I let the Colts pull the wool over my eyes with their win last week over the Chiefs, thinking that they would be able to defend their home turf against the Titans. Because this is basically where the AFC South runs through. One of these two teams is usually on top of it. And, you know, the Titans barely came away with the win last week against the Raiders at home after having, you know, choked in week one against the Giants and then were decimated by Buffalo week two. I thought maybe the Colts had turned a corner by getting that win over the Chiefs, but I'm looking at the ticker during the Bear game and I see the Titans are off to a 24-3 lead in the first half that they never really looked back from. You know, the Colts were able to get it up to 24-17, but couldn't get any closer due to three turnovers, two interceptions from, an interception and a fumble from Matt Ryan and a fumble from Jonathan Taylor that nixed scoring opportunities. Like they were, I think they were all in Titan territory and they were turned away because of these mistakes. So they were their own worst enemy. And the Colts have only won one of their last six games, the game they won last week against Kansas City. So that's the last two games of last year, which if they'd have won one of them, they go to the playoffs, and three of the four games this year. So things are not looking good out there in Indy with Frank Reich and company. And I believe Jonathan Taylor even left the game injured with an ankle injury. So, you know, he's probably day-to-day and want to keep an eye on him for next week. Bears and Giants in New York. We already know how I feel about this one. The Bears passing game was better, but it was it's a low bar to clear, quite frankly. Lauren Cox, our great friend from Locked On Bears, had a tweet saying that when Fields had a clean pocket, he was 10 of 14 for 168 yards. the real tragedy there is that overall he was 11 for 22 for 174 yards. So that means when he was under duress for the other eight plays, he was 1 for 8 for 8 yards. While, you know, he was underneath somebody, or, you know, it happened so many times when they tried to boot him and he just couldn't get around the corner on the defender because the defender just kept coming. I talked about that at length in the review episode yesterday. But, you know, when he has a clean pocket, 10 for 14, 168 yards, can't complain with that. But the Bears just weren't really able to get anything going offensively. They just could not finish the drive. They settled for 4 field goals. 3 of them were in the red zone. And actually, the fourth one was just outside the red zone. I mean, he didn't – our kicker – Michael Badgley, who I believe is getting released today, unfortunately for him. He hit all 4 of those field goals, and I think the furthest one he had to hit was from maybe 30 yards out. So we weren't asking much of him. He did everything we asked him to do, but you know, in the end, it was Barkley and Jones that killed the Bears. Jones finished the game with a bum ankle, so we'll keep an eye on him and what he'll be able to do going forward. And true to this, to the way this team plays, they were in it till the end, down 20-12. Eberflus playing not to lose runs Khalil Herbert into a brick wall of humanity on 3rd and 2. We end up punting instead of going forward on 4th down, even though we were in Giant territory. We pin the Giants deep. We stop them. We force a punt. And then Velus Jones, who we've been waiting to see all season long, muffs the punt. The Giants recover. Ball game. That's it. It was over after that. So not a good showing by the Bears, where basically nothing they did looked good. It's like, even if they had won, this would have been what I call another yeah, but victory. You know, we won last week against the Texans, yeah, but we looked awful against one of the worst teams in the league and, you know, barely beat them at the end of the ballgame. I know the W is the only thing that matters, but holy hell, it was way too much drama for playing the Texans. And, you know, it would have been the same thing with this ballgame. Yeah, we came back and won, but, boy, that game was a mess. There's a lot of work to do with this team, and I think we as Bear fans just need to wrap our head around the fact this is going to be a long season until Ryan Poles can get the horses in place for this team to actually go somewhere. So I picked the Bears. I take the loss. So I'm what, 2-4 now, I think? Eagles and Jags. This thing got off to an interesting start. Starting with a pick 6 of Jalen Hurts for 59 yards to give the Jags an early 7-0 lead. Then they actually come back down on their ensuing drive after that and put another one in the end zone to start 14-0 on Philly in Philly. You know, Doug Peterson's return to Philly since he was let go after the 2019 season. But I don't know what it is about Philly in the second quarter. They scored all 24 points against the Commanders last week in the second quarter. They won the second quarter against the Jags on Sunday 20-0. So they were down 14-0 early. They were up 20-14 at halftime. They end up sacking Lawrence 4 times and held the Jaguars to only 219 yards of total offense and just over 20 minutes time of possession. You know, they really kept the ball out of Trevor Lawrence and company's hands, and in the end, that was the difference. The Eagles win 29-21. They had me sweating it there in the beginning, but they come away with the win, moving me up to 3-4. Moving on to the Jets at the Steelers. There's trouble in paradise, folks. Mike Tomlin might be looking at his first losing season as a head coach. He's had a couple of 500 seasons with them, including last year when they went 8-8-1. I believe that's technically 500. Maybe actually being a little bit better, but after eking out a win over the Bengals week 1, they haven't won again. They lost to the Patriots, I think week 2, and remember who it was. And they lost to the Browns last week, and they They lose again here, this time to the Jets. Kenny Pickett replaced Trubisky in the second half. Trubisky went 7 for 13, 84 yards, an interception, and was sacked three times in the first half. Pickett went 10 for 13, 120 yards, three picks, but had two rushing touchdowns. So there was some spark he was able to provide the offense, get them down into scoring range, and he runs them in to make it interesting. But the Jets were too much in this one. Zach Wilson making his regular season debut after suffering that little the same knee injury that Andy Dalton had for the Bears week two last year, that where you see his knee buckle, it looks like the worst, but ends up just being a really bad bone bruise. Wilson making his debut, went 18 for 36, so not great, but for 252 and two touchdowns, including a touchdown catch. Barry and Barrows throwing a two-yard catch pass to the quarterback for the touchdown, who did the gritty to celebrate. The Jets take the win 24-20 over the Steelers, and no word yet on whether or not Kenny Pickett is going to be the starter for week five, or if it's going to go back to Mitch, because you could look at it either way. You know, Mitch did not perform well, only 84 yards on 7 of 13 in the first half, was sacked three times, but the rookie threw three picks. That definitely hurt them. So are we going to let the rookie work through it? Are we going to put the veteran back in there to, show him how, I guess? I don't know. But Steelers take the loss, so I take the loss 3-5, I believe, is where we're sitting now. Baltimore and Buffalo, the Ravens hosting the Bills. And again, you know, I'm sitting there looking at the ticker, and I'm just getting pissed because all my picks got behind early. Philly got down early, 14-0. The Colts and the Titans. Seattle jumping out early on Detroit. I was like, man, this losing this Thursday game is really, really a bad omen for me, man. I mean, it's like all of my picks are down and down big in the first half, because even this one, the Ravens up 20-3 in the third quarter, or excuse me, in the second quarter, in the first half. But Buffalo goes on a run, essentially shuts the Ravens out for the rest of the ball game with the Buffalo kicker Tyler Bass kicking a 21-yarder as time expired to break the 20-20 tie, give the Bills the 23-20 win. And I believe I heard this is five straight losses for the Ravens in Baltimore, which is kind of unprecedented, because at a time, this was one of the toughest places in the league to win a football game. So the Ravens had a true home field advantage, but not for the last part of last year and the start of this year. I mean, and what really sucks for the Ravens, especially for Ravens fans, I'm sure, is that they've had big leads in both their home games so far this year. That they had a huge lead over the Dolphins a couple of weeks ago, and then a 20-3 lead before the half against the Bills this week, and watched them both disappear and come away with losses. So the Ravens got some work to do to tighten up the ship. The Bills were able to bounce back from their loss to the Dolphins last week. They're 3-1, and with the I was going to say it puts them in first place with the Dolphins' loss, but the Dolphins have the tiebreaker, so that's not true. But the Bills win, so I get the win, 4-5, I believe, where we sit now. Chargers and Texans, I didn't really have to give this one much thought. I did not think much of the Texans. As a matter of fact, I was very upset that the Bears struggled as much as they did to beat the Texans last week. Fully expected the Chargers to be able to bounce back from their loss to the Jaguars to take out the Texans, and sure enough, they did. Austin Eckler scored two of his three touchdowns in the first half to give the Chargers a 27-7 halftime lead. But again, I'm sitting there watching the ticker, and I'm watching this lead disappear. The Texans got it all the way to 27-24 midway through the fourth quarter, but Eckler delivered the killer blow with his third and final touchdown, a 14-yard catch with about 2.5 minutes to go to give the final score to set that one in stone. 34-24, Chargers take the win. I think that bumps them up to 2-2 on the season, and the Texans are 0-3-1. So still haven't figured how to get the W yet, and But I mean, they rattled off 24 points. That would have won them the game last week in Chicago, but not enough to beat the Chargers at home on Sunday. So I get the win. That puts me at 500, 5-5. I believe I'm keeping track of this well enough. Now we head out to Carolina, Arizona, and the Panthers. Game was tied at 10 at the end of three, so a little back and forth battle going on. But 16 fourth quarter points for the visiting Cardinals was enough to get the win. Kyler Murray had two touchdown passes and a TD run in the winning effort to even Arizona's record at 2-2. Carolina falls at 1-3, and the quarterback controversy in Carolina continues, as Baker Mayfield has not exactly warmed himself to his new Carolina fan base. But Matt Rhule came out today saying that Baker will in fact be the starter for week five this coming Sunday. So he's got at least one more game, and I don't know when Darnold might be coming back from the injury he suffered right at the end of preseason before he becomes an option, or if they wheel the rookie out there. I believe they drafted one of the quarterbacks. I want to say it's Matt Corral, but I also think that might be the one that went to Washington. I get them mixed up, but they drafted one of the quarterbacks in like the fourth or fifth round, so I think maybe he's the backup right now if Darnold isn't ready, so maybe that's why they were hesitant to hand the keys over to the kid. But we'll see. Cardinals win, so I win 6-5. We're above 500 now. As we go to Lambeau, Patriots at the Packers, and honestly, this game was a lot closer than I thought it was going to be. I did not think the Packers would have this much trouble beating the Patriots. I know Belichick's a genius and everything, but that only goes so far if you don't have the talent to back up these concepts. And, boy, man, he gave Rodgers fits there in the first half. Rodgers was 4 of 11 for 44 yards, threw a pick six, had 11.2 passer rating in the first half, and the Patriots were up like 10-7 at halftime. But he rebounded in the second half to finish with 252 yards on 21 of 35 and two touchdowns, including a 13-yarder to Romeo Doubs, the rookie, that tied the game and to send it to overtime. And then they go back and forth in the overtime period, and Crosby was able to put it through the uprights as overtime expired to give the Packers the win, 27-24. So I got the pick right, but they had me sweating bullets over it because the Patriots came to play, and good for them. But came up just short. They fall to 1-3. The Packers go to 3-1. It gives me the win, so I'm at 7-5. I don't know if this would be considered an upset. I think record-wise, it definitely would be 2-1 versus 3-0. But you know, I picked the Raiders to win. I think maybe some of you thought I was nuts to do that with how they'd played in the first few weeks. Something just told me they were going to be able to get it over on the Broncos, and they did. 32-23, Josh Jacobs had 144 yards and scored the Raiders' first and last touchdowns to push them over the Broncos and get Josh McDaniels his first win as head coach. 23, I think, is the season high points-wise for the Broncos, because their offense has been atrocious thus far. I mean, they won a game 11-10 last week against the 49ers. They beat the Texans like 17-9, and they lost like 17-14 or something like that to the Seahawks. So, yeah, this is the season high for them points-wise, and yet it was 9 points short of what the Raiders were able to put on the board. Devontae Adams, over 100 yards receiving in this ball game, and like I said, Josh McDaniels gets his first win as Raiders head coach, so he gets to keep his job for at least one more week, and the Raiders go to 1-3. The Broncos fall to 2-2 on the season, and they are really struggling out there in Denver. Sunday night game. Oh, right, with the Raiders in the win, that puts me, what, 8-6? Yeah, 8-6. And let's see, Chiefs, Buccaneers, Sunday Night Football. The Buccaneers finally found their offense. They had all of their receivers back. Mike Evans coming off his suspension, Julio Jones, Chris Godwin, all healthy enough to play on Sunday night. And the result was Brady throwing for 385 and three touchdowns, two of which that went to Mike Evans, who had 108 yards on his return. But uncharacteristically, Tampa took the night off on defense because they gave up 41 points to Mahomes and company. And, yeah, I mean, it was and Mahomes had one of those insane plays to that resulted in a touchdown where, like, they were goal to go at the 1 or 2 yard line. Mahomes is running around the field like a chicken with his head cut off, being pursued by every Buccaneer defender on the team. And just before he's about to cross the line of scrimmage, he pulls up and literally, like, dips the ball over the top to Clyde Edwards-Helaire and results in a touchdown. It's like just one of those things where I don't know how many broken televisions, how many TVs survived for Buccaneers fans after that play, running around, and he's literally running into the arms of a defender and then just pitches the ball over the top at the last minute and it's a touchdown. There had to be, you know, in unison, a million Buccaneer fans like, you got to be kidding me when that happened. So I'm sure there was some far more colorful language added to that particular statement, but the sentiment was the same. But thankfully, I picked the Chiefs. I thought their offense would be a little too much, or actually not even so much that their offense would be too much, but that the Buccaneers' offense wouldn't be enough. And I didn't anticipate 41-31, but I got the pick right. I picked the Chiefs. Makes me 9-6 going into the Monday night game. Chiefs 3-1, Buccaneers 2-2, I believe. Yes, 2-2. And then finally, the Monday night game, as we wrap things up here, 49ers at the hosting the Rams. And for the second time this year, I ignored one of those this team has the other team's number at their home stadium thing, like I did with Jacksonville and the Colts earlier. I ignored it again, that the 49ers usually play the Rams really tough and or beat them just about every time, even under Sean McVay, and pick the Rams to win anyway. And the difference in the game was twofold. When I the portions of the game that I watched, I noticed two things. Number one, the Niners won the battle up front all night long on both sides of the ball. They sacked Matt Stafford 7 times, and they were in his face the other X amount of times that he went back to throw. And the real difference in the game was that the 49ers converted their red zone opportunities. They had that one outstanding play from Deebo Samuel where he took like a 4-yard pass for 50-something yards and a touchdown in the first half. But I believe the Niners were 2-for-2 in the red zone as far as putting it in the end zone. And the Rams settled for field goals all night, and there's your result in the score. 24, 49ers, Rams 9, and drops me to 9-7 for the week. But the good news is that puts me at 33-30-1 for the season, so that one game above 500 is now 3 games above 500. So we'll see if I can improve upon this as I still try to figure out the NFL and you know, how these teams are performing this year. I used to be better at this, but to tell you the truth, I haven't really paid this close attention. Like, I'm always aware of what's going on, who wins, who loses, but the whys and everything, to steal a phrase from our former coach, Matt Nagy, the whys on why teams are winning and losing and things like that, I wasn't really privy to. If it wasn't the Bears game, I wasn't really paying attention, kind of thing. So that's also why I'm doing this show now, is that I wanted to get back into, you know, having a deeper knowledge of the league outside of who's in first place, who's in last, and things like that. So this has been really fun and very helpful in doing that so that I can be better doing the show and all that kind of stuff. Because I can't tell you how many times, last year especially, when I would have a guest on the show to preview a matchup between our two teams, and I was learning about their season for the first time as I'm talking to the person, looking at their schedule, their wins and losses, and, you know, maybe there was something I remembered from a highlight I saw or something like that, and I wanted to be a little bit more invested and know a bit more about our opponents going into these games. So that's why you got an NFL preview show now, so I have to pay attention to what's going on with the league and the ins and outs, the whys, if you will, on why one team won this particular game, even though the other, you know, the team they beat was the better team kind of thing. So anyway, guys, I think that is going to do it. Player of the week. We had several candidates here. I mean, even in a losing effort, TJ Hockenson, 179 yards on 8 catches in a losing effort for the Rams. Geno Smith, 320 and 2 touchdowns for the Seahawks. Rashad Penny, 151 yards and 2 touchdowns for the Seahawks. Michael Badgley being pulled off the street on a Friday and kicking 4 field goals for the Bears, just being a homer on that one. But in the end, I think I'm going to go with Rashad Penny, because though not only did he have an outstanding, like a career-high day, 151 yards, but both of those touchdowns that he ran came in very, very critical moments. They were moments where the Lions defense just had to make the stop, and not only did he get the first down, especially that one on 3rd and 16, not only did he get the first down, but he took it to the house. You know, that last one on 3rd and 5 with about 3 minutes to go, he breaks right through the line of scrimmage, never got touched. The next thing you know, it's a 10-point deficit. And even though the Lions were able to score a touchdown to make it a 3-point game, that touchdown that Penny had scored was the killer. So I'm going to go with Rashad Penny this week, player of the week for week number 4. And that's going to do it for the week four NFL review episode of the Bears Talk Underground. Come back on Thursday when our good friend Chris Gates from the Daily Norseman will join us to help us preview Bears-Vikings in Minnesota for week number 5. I mean, that's going to be weird. Seeing them play in the Metrodome and early in the season instead of late December, early January to close out the year. I'm sure there will be plenty of, you know, jabs about that going on. But come back on Thursday, and we'll preview Bears-Vikings for week 5. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been the Bears Talk Underground. Hey, man.